Hi, my name is Madeline Stanek, and this is my capstone on the opioid epidemic in Appalachia. My question is, why has the opioid epidemic been so geographically concentrated in Appalachia? Why isn't this issue as prevalent on the West Coast as the East Coast? And what are some of the various reasons that explain why Appalachia in particular has been so harshly impacted? Well, over the past year, I've been researching the various reasons, including the internal and external factors. And I'm looking in particular at the role of the pharmaceutical industry, the faltering economy, culture within Appalachia, those healthcare delivery models in Appalachia. And from here, I'm trying to determine whether or not it's more of an internal faltering where the internal already existing culture norms have really created this issue, or is it more so the outside pressures that have caused this exposure to this very bad issue that just hasn't been able to be controlled ever since it was once introduced into this area. Well, in terms of the outside external factors, really the main one is Big Pharma. And the Big Pharma utilized many really aggressive marketing techniques and also was incorrectly labeling many of their drugs, and this oftentimes led to overprescription of opioids, which eventually led to a huge number of people who were inevitably addicted. And after a couple of lawsuits, Purdue actually did have to take responsibility and had major payout, but the damage, you know, had been done and so many people had been addicted. But on the other side of the coin, we have the internal factors, which really are setting this area up for substance abuse issues. We see the social factors and some of the culture of which perpetuate the cycle of drug abuse. We see in Appalachia, it is the white, rural, working class people. Different than poverty as you see in cities, there's an additional element also with industry there. We have our coal mining industry, just lack of in general growth and a general sense of hopelessness. So over the course of the year, I've been trying to balance these two themes and learn more about different players that are involved and see how these players have interacted and caused this issue. So over the course of my studies, I have really determined through my own personal research that the pharma really had the biggest role out of any external factor, more so than the use of various suppliers, which had increased the supplies of opioids to these areas, or even policies like Medicaid. The lack of Medicaid expansion really caused a lot of people to not have any adequate health care insurance. Oftentimes they were buying drugs off the streets, they couldn't afford it. But really, out of all this, it's pharma just had so much money poured into this campaign to really get people on board with opioids, and this is really before the adverse effects were widely publicized. And by this point, so many people had gotten, like I said before, had become dependent. So from that perspective, we see how it really would have just been difficult if any region in general had been had this hard presence of Big Pharma, had just been constantly, you know, encouraged to buy these drugs and encouraged to go out and prescribe these drugs, as pharma also also encourage doctors along with consumers. And then we just see how Appalachia really fell susceptible to that. But on that side, this really wouldn't have been possible if Appalachia hadn't already been so susceptible. And as in Vance Joy's Hillbilly Elegy, you can really get sort of a bit of an insider's perspective. Just the culture of Appalachia is very unique in that it really represents this white, you know, rural, working class people. It's not like any other like suburbia or inner city type population, and I think at first many people aren't always going to recognize them as a certain different kind of demographic, but in actuality it is. And while my research did discuss this a bit, and I did learn about some of the social cultural factors within Appalachia that kind of contribute to this general like pessimistic attitude and poor outlook and sort of more reliance on drug behaviors. This still doesn't really share the whole story. So in this podcast, I'm going to continue on and share some of the interviews I had with a couple of individuals who were willing to discuss with me some of their experience in Appalachia. I was able to talk with a West Virginia rural sort of urgent care volunteer, along with two other people who were involved in volunteering in Southwest Virginia with WISE at the Healthcare Wagon. So from these two perspectives, it really helped me to hear more what it would be like directly to interact with those in Appalachia and with seeing the opioid epidemic and how it plays out in reality, not just looking from a broader academic point, but more so getting that internal human perspective. In this topic is connected to my upbringing. So I grew up in a very small rural area upstate New York. It's called Payne Post, New York. It's a very small Finger Lakes area closely bordering Pennsylvania, and this actually encompasses the most northern part of Appalachia. And I lived there all the way until going to college, and I didn't really realize how different my experience was growing up compared to most of my other fellow classmates here who mostly grew up in like suburbia type areas. But anyway, while I didn't live in the most like desolate or impoverished area within Appalachia, I do feel like I have a bit of a sense of awareness of some of the struggles that are seen in white rural America, and consequently this connection really motivated me to understand why this region, more so than other areas in the United States, really are struggling with opioid abuse. So while I have some personal experiences, I have not had that many encounters directly in the heart of Appalachia where really the opioid epidemic has been so intense. Consequently, I interviewed a few people who were willing to share about some of their experiences and the reasons why they think in particular Appalachia has been so harshly impacted. So my first interview was with David Kappel. He works as a volunteer with the West Virginia trauma department. So he was able to share why he thinks in particular the Appalachia has been more so harshly impacted, and what his experience, personal experience, had been sort of, and what he has seen at his time while working with the West Virginia trauma department. I guess I'm just curious, what in general has your experiences been like with the opioid epidemic in West Virginia?
Well, a year or so ago, we were number one in the country, unfortunately, in deaths per capita. And that's directly relatable, of course, to overdose deaths. The worst episode was one weekend in Huntington, West Virginia, when a drug dealer came in with what was probably heroin, but it was laced with carfentanil, which is supposed to standard fentanyl is about 100 times more potent. We had a weekend outbreak with several deaths, and it really attracted national spotlight. Of course, statewide, we were already focused on the problem. The addressing the problem to date had been mostly clinics to treat substance use disorder patients, usually methadone or Suboxone. And those clinics always get a bad rap from the public because they're seen as just public-funded, another narcotic. Of course, the idea behind those clinics were that it would cut down on risky behavior, provide less harm, poor patients, get them off the streets, get them out of crime, get them out of sex trafficking in order to reduce the societal impact. But with the increasing number of deaths, of course, there's been a statewide push by the legislature, push by the Bureau of Public Health, and both statewide and regionally to address the overdose deaths, specifically with naloxone. And it has been pushed out statewide, not only to pre-hospital EMS providers, but also to fire and police departments. Then the legislature has enacted bills in order to tighten up on the legitimate prescribing of opioids. They have a data bank now with the Board of Pharmacy, and all of it is hopefully observed, and guidelines have gone out to physicians. Physicians in the state now have to take a mandatory opioid prescribing course in order to renew their licenses, in order to try to reduce the number of new patients that get hooked on this stuff. How that will work, it's too early to tell yet. A lot of things have been pushed out in a frantic effort to control the epidemic without time for evidence-based data gathering studies. That's not to discredit the efforts, it's just to say that we don't know yet whether these efforts will reduce the number of new people who fall into the substance use disorder.
Yeah. So why do you think Appalachia specifically has been impacted more so than like other areas in the country? Because like you see, like you said, like West Virginia is like the number one. Why do you think West Virginia over other areas?
I think you hit on it a little bit in your earlier comment about predominantly white, poverty-stricken, culturally isolated communities. And really, with the loss of coal mining jobs in southern West Virginia, in spite of all the political promises, there really aren't job opportunities that would let folks aspire to the standard of living they see on the television about new cars, new TVs, and this, that, and the other. So there's a real sort of hopelessness. They feel in a lot of ways they're underrepresented nationally. Broadband is very slow to get into rural areas, as you probably know. So what goes on locally passes person to person and family to family in good old-fashioned ways. No longer do we have party lines, but they have readily accessible cell phones and do the social networking. They just don't, we don't have any intrusion of high-level technical jobs in most of the state. Areas, but even the areas that are thriving don't necessarily escape. For example, the Eastern Panhandle, which does have jobs, is growing, unfortunately, is very close to the big cities, right on the interstate through which drugs pass, upon which drugs pass. I think primarily it's poverty and helplessness and looking for joy in all the wrong places.
Yeah, that.
And we're, you know, at the education level, especially in the southern most regions of the state and central portions of our state, education levels really suffer in terms of high school graduation, even people going to college. So that also compounds the social issues.
So what do you think, like, people outside of Appalachia, I guess in general, like, don't quite
fully, I guess, understand about the epidemic? Is there anything you think that may be like misrepresented or misunderstood?
Oh, absolutely, and it's not just outside, it's also inside Appalachia. People still are slow to accept the fact that substance use disorder is really a disease. Many people still believe it's a moral choice, but once a person falls prey to the high or the good feeling that goes with the drug, then the actual neurochemistry in the brain begins to change, and they become seekers of a return of that thrill, that joy, that endorphin feeling that other people get from normal activities, running, eating, sex, whatever. Now they've found something that's even better, and the brain keeps telling them, go do it again. That was great. Let's try it again. So until neuroscientists, the medical community, figure out a way to reverse that neurochemical change in the brain, we're going to struggle with this whole thing.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, I saw a lot about like the role of Purdue Pharma and like introducing, you know, like OxyContin and such. Like, do you think that played a major role in this epidemic as well, like within Appalachia?
Oh, yes, because there are several communities that the sheer volume and number of prescription drugs being shipped into those communities far exceeded any imaginable reason for the small population that was there. And so I think that probably with the aid of sort of disethical cash on the barrel head prescribing clinics, which there's been serious clampdown on, which is overdue, but with the assistance of those clinics, the pharmaceuticals are taking advantage of it and pouring them medications into these communities.
Yeah. So I guess, like, overall, would you say, is it like a combination of like inside and outside, or more so like the kind of internal sort of sense, like you were saying, like lack of industry and economic prospects and like hopelessness that really like caused like this to be such a huge issue?
Yeah, it made a very vulnerable population even more vulnerable, and then unfortunately disethical people took advantage of that, including drug merchants who come from the
appreciate Dr. Cappell speaking with me and sharing some of his own views, and I think it's really beneficial to hear someone who's lived in West Virginia for a long period of time and worked with the trauma department. I thought the Huntington example was really interesting, and in how such a potent drug like the carfentanil, once it is laced, can make 100% more potent than actual fentanyl. So that's honestly like it's very scary from a public health standpoint to just know that a laced drug can do and just how dangerous it is. And I think it really highlights the importance of like understanding this epidemic more in greater depth than just sort of knowing like different reasons, particularly in Appalachia. And from hearing from Dr. Cappell, it appears that a lot of the cultural reasons and the industry and the failure of industry has really seemed to contribute to this issue. Now I'm going to actually be listening to another perspective. A young student, Meg, who spent the summer working with the Health Wagon. Now the Health Wagon organization provides free care to those in Southwest Virginia, particularly around Wise, Virginia. And she had the opportunity to work do more clerk work along with like shadowing doctors. So she really had a great opportunity and got to see a lot and directly interact with some people who were drug addicts, along with just like observing the culture as a whole and just having a better understanding of the normal like demographics and just immersing yourself in what the cultural like norms are. So I really enjoyed hearing also what she had to share about her own experiences.
Well, I guess like I volunteered at the Health Wagon for the summer. I interned there, and there were a pretty large group of volunteers that were all mandated volunteers. Mm-hmm. So like during the week they would have to come into the Health Wagon and volunteer there, and then on the weekends they would go back to jail. And that was like because of the fact that like they don't have a violent record at all, but like they pretty much all of them, or at least like everyone who openly talked about it, said that they were like in that position because of drugs.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was interesting. That was like, I didn't realize that would, I don't know, like, I didn't even know that was an option.
Yeah.
Or like didn't think about that. But yeah, it was really like interesting hearing people's stories, because some of them were like, I don't know, like some people, it was just crazy like how much like jail time they got for something that was like,
just for like possession of.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that at all.
Which I mean, and I guess
possession charges. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know like the full stories. I only know their perspectives, but I don't know. I was just thinking like, I feel like there has to be like another option in terms of like, rather than forcing them to like quit their jobs and like spend their weekends in jail.
So it's just the weekends, not even like the weekdays then? Like,
right, yeah.
So then you can't work a job, right, then?
Right, like, yeah, because they have to volunteer all day.
Oh.
Which, like, on one hand, I'm like, okay, like, maybe that's good, but then on the other hand, like, they weren't effective workers. They weren't trained for anything that they were doing at the Health Wagon.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, half the time it seemed like people were just trying to, like, find things for them to do. So I feel like it could be a good idea, but it also wasn't, like, following through very
And,
well.
Like, I feel like if you're, like, a
Appalachian region is like necessarily like targeted any more than any other regions. Like I feel like it probably is more so just the fact that like people don't have the money to go to like expensive rehab centers and like, or have the money to like get lawyers to keep them out of jail or like things like that. I feel like if anything it might just be more noticeable because of the fact that like a lot of people don't have the resources to like get themselves out of these situations.
Yeah, so I guess you think like the reason why Appalachia then was more affected was probably just because like how poor it is in general, like, or I don't know.
Yeah, like I feel like there's also too like all of the people who used to like all of the people who are unemployed now because they used to be coal miners, and whether they're unemployed because like either they can't find a job or because of like they have horrible like crippling conditions now like from working in the coal mines for so long, like the amount of people who have, like, do you know what black lung is?
Is that's from like breathing in, right?
Like working in the coal mines for years and breathing in all of like everything.
Oh geez.
All of that stuff.
Yeah,
but like, so on one hand there's like, you can, like, the government will, like, count it as a disability if you have that, because, like, you can't work effectively, if you have that condition. But on the other hand, like, the government makes it extremely hard for you to, like, actually prove that you have that.
Really?
Prove that it's from mining. So, like, when I was shadowing a doctor there, like, there were multiple, like, older men who came in, and, like, and, like, the doctor knew that, like, it was the beginnings of black lung, but, like, you can't really prove that it is that until it's, like, further along, until it's, like, so bad that it's...
So is there, like, a certain test then to, like, make it...
Yeah, I don't know, like, the specifics of the test or how they prove it, but I just remember, like, the doctor talking about how messed up it was. So, like, these people weren't eligible to get, like, any assistance because they didn't, like, they couldn't, like, yet prove that they had it. He was like, but in, like, 10 years, like, when it's so bad that there's no coming back from it, then, like, that's when the government will start paying their medical bills for it.
Oh, so they'll, like, let it get, like, really bad.
Yeah.
Instead of, yeah, like, trying to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, even things like that are just, like, really depressing situations. Like, all of these people were working in the coal mines because that was the only job that paid, like, a livable wage. And then now, like, not only, like, on one hand, I guess it's kind of good that those jobs were gone because they're, like, really dangerous. But yeah, also, on the other hand, like, there was nothing that ever came in to replace those jobs. And so it's just, like, led to a really depressing condition in terms of, like, the town and just, like, people's outlook on, like, life opportunity within the town.
Yeah.
And, like, all the people that are left with, like I said, like, Black Lung or, like, the beginnings of it. And, like, so many of them aren't even getting compensated for that yet. So I feel like just, like, an overall depressing...
Yeah, that is really sad. I mean, yeah, I didn't realize too, like, with even with, like, I never even thought about, like, the Black Lung, how that, like, affects you, but you can't work from that either, so that just, like, adds to it.
I don't know. So, like, I don't know specifically, like, I obviously never asked anyone, like, oh, like, why did you start, like, doing this or whatever, but I feel like it would make sense that, like, that would play into it, like, if someone, like, was unemployed or, like, I don't know, like, ties into the fact that, like, they don't have the money to pay for rehab or they can't, like, like, even if you just can't even see, like, a better, like, a reason to quit, really.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like if somebody has, like, a good job and, like, something that's, like, worth quitting for, that could mean a lot in terms of, like, versus somebody who, like, has no job to go back to, like, has no health insurance, like,
that was tough.
Like, the whole, like, depressing aspect plays into it a lot, but on the front doors of, like, the health center that I was at and the one that I shadowed at, like, there were huge signs that said, like, no opioids kept on these premises.
Oh.
So, like, I feel like that's something that I actually never noticed that, like, anywhere else.
Yeah.
Except for, like, weirdly, when I was in South Africa for my study abroad, like, the rural hospital that we went to visit also had that, like, written on the doors. Wow. So it's, like, I guess a weird comparison between, like, really rural South African impoverished hospital and, like, just a rural American hospital.
So Dr. Kappel, like Meg, both sort of highlight on this fatalistic, kind of negative, more pessimistic outlook often seen in Appalachia. You see, a lot of these communities have just been absolutely kind of destroyed economically with the loss of coal mining jobs. The coal mining industry had really supported these towns entirely, and there hasn't been anything to really replace that. And in general, even those who had these coal mining jobs were often had very negative health outcomes because of that. First, you have literally, this is hard labor, it's backbreaking, breaking labor. You're more likely to use pain medications, and that can lead to sort of chronic pain and opioid prescriptions. Similarly, as noted, the Black Lung case. So not only do you have physical pain, but this Black Lung, this condition that makes it harder to breathe, it eventually is a debilitating disease. And debilitating diseases can cause depression, and with depression you're more likely to also want to engage in drugs just to sort of cope with life in general. So it's kind of hitting on both, like, the mental need to take drugs as well as the physical need. So you're hitting it really from both ways. From this last segment, I really already saw Dr. Kappel highlighted on it, but just trying to hear a little bit more about maybe some of the more common misconceptions from outsiders and, like, why people think that that maybe Appalachians are just, like, lazy in the sense that they're not getting their, they're not trying at all. But what really I think I've found is how people are really trying, you know? Like, it's kind of shallow to just say that, like, like you need to get your act together from the outsider's perspective, and you don't really get a true sense of what people are going through. So this last segment just sort of highlighting a little bit of what people are going through, and even though they may not appear to be always making the right choices, there's so many other factors involved in it, and it's just really difficult in growing up in these communities and having these culture norms that they're just living in every single day. And it sort of also connects to the idea of Dr. Cabell just saying how, like, there's really not like a quick fix to any like drug abuse problem. Like, until there's something that really addresses the way that your brain works and how it's wired, because these drugs just kind of force your brain to become wired differently so that you really are dependent on it. And like, likewise, not that this is exactly the same, but in the case of like these poor healthy behaviors, like people have grown up doing this, and it's like how they've been raised as babies, just eating poorly and maybe smoking and just being exposed to that. So these have all been ingrained in them, and like any other change, it just takes a long time to fix. It's not going to be a quick change.
In regards to most things, like, are educated and know, like, even, like, I'm thinking of it more in terms of like health in general right now, but like a lot of people who I worked with at the health center, like, I saw them making poor health choices every day in terms of like smoking and just like drinking like Mountain Dew, like multiple Mountain Dews a day, and like always reaching for a Pepsi versus a water, like, or like getting fast food for lunch every day rather than like bringing their own lunch. So I feel like I saw a lot of like not so good health choices, but then on the other hand, like, people like were educated enough to know that they were making those health choices, because like people would always say things like, oh, like, I know this is so bad, like, but like I've been working on it, and like, and I don't know, I feel like it's just realizing that it's not like an overnight change in most situations. Like for example, like, there's even this one nurse practitioner who like I would see her drink at least like 3 Pepsis a day, and I like, yeah, and she like one time said something about it, and she was like, yeah, she's like, I'm doing so much better than I used to, though. She's like, I used to drink at least 10 a day. And I was like, oh my god.
10 a day. Wow.
So, like, yeah. So I feel like just looking in and thinking, like, oh, like, these people are making, like, horrible choices. Like, they don't know, like, somebody needs to teach them is, like, not necessarily true. I feel like there definitely is. I think, at least, like, from what I've seen, a lot of people do realize, and, like, it's not that they don't care at all. Like, I feel like it seems to be more of like they are working on making those changes, but it's just not like going to be an overnight change.
Yeah.
Because like, you can't change, like, if, and like, people talked about the fact too that like their parents would like fill their baby bottles with like Mountain Dew sometimes, and like,
yeah.
So like, I feel hard. Like, if you grow up in a culture of like, you're literally like, instead of baby formula, you're getting like Pepsi or Mountain Dew. Like, how realistic is it to just go from
that's
that
crazy.
To, like, water all the time?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I feel like that's one misconception. But then, also, I just thought of something else, too. Like, I feel like, so, like, you're talking a lot about, like, the opioid epidemic in general, but I feel like on the other hand of that, like, part of that, and maybe the fact that it is so, like, prevalent and obvious there in so many ways, also causes a lot of people to be like hyper aware of it and like really like scared of like falling into that trap as well. Because I know that like for example, when I was shadowing a doctor, and this like war vet had really like pretty bad PTSD and anxiety and like a few other health conditions. And, like, none of the medications that the doctor was giving him were working. And he, like, the doctor was like, maybe, he was like, I think maybe we should try to take, like, a more natural approach and just, like, try some CBD oil. And the patient was like, oh, what's that? And he was like, well, like, it's the, like, one of the components of marijuana. And the patient, like, freaked out and was like, oh, like, hell no, I will not take that. He was like, I cannot start with those drugs, like, He was like, I will not let myself do that. Like, I've seen what this does to people. And, like, and I feel like he just, like, even though, like, it was a doctor who was saying that, like, this is okay, like, CBD is not what makes you high. Like, this is just, like, one component of, like, this plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because of the fact, like, weed is, like, kind of grouped in the same category as, like the bad drugs, like, yeah. opioids and things. Like, I feel like
A lot of fear, I guess, in general. Yeah.
So he was, like, immediately, like, no, like, I will not do, like, any of those, like, bad drugs or, like, or even, like, anything associated with them.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, there's also, on the other hand, like, it's made people really, like, hyper-aware and, like, fearful of any kind of drugs like that.
So thank you again to Dr. Kapil and Meg, who were able to share their own views and what their thoughts were on the opioid epidemic. I really thought it was beneficial to hear this insider's perspective, you know, with someone who's actually been in Appalachia and has directly worked with addicts or volunteered and worked with the emergency services and the healthcare department. This is all very valuable because, like, I have not had these experiences directly, as along with many of us, we have all not had these experiences directly. So I think you gain a lot from hearing this perspective from someone within Appalachia, and most academia doesn't really share this side as well. So in regards to my own academic question, my capstone question, which was, why is the opioid epidemic so concentrated in Appalachia? Why is it hit harder than most other areas in the U.S.? Well, I sort of was able to reformulate my answer a little bit after hearing some of these perspectives, because initially I thought, really, it seemed like Big Pharma was the worst guy, and they still were pretty bad in how they tried to get doctors on board with just prescribing copious amount of drugs, more so than what was needed, and were sort of deceitful in sharing what the potential side effects were. But regardless, from hearing from those within Appalachia, it just seems like Appalachia itself is such in a kind of a dismal state, and any type of, like, drug or similar type substance abuse issue could have hit this area probably just as hard. It just sounds like, in general, through the cultural reasons and the industrial regions, Appalachia is just prone to becoming susceptible to drug usage. We have the general sense of hopelessness and the lack of jobs and economic prospects in a very isolated communities. Even, like, both of the speakers really only talked about these internal factors, not much about the external, which I thought was very interesting. And hearing that, it makes sense to me that these internal factors played such an important role, and kind of similar to the whole idea with trying to fix the whole idea of addiction. You know, it's just something really difficult because the brain is entirely recircuited when it comes to addiction. So this is not a quick change. It doesn't happen overnight. When anyone with any addictive disorder, it takes years and lots of hard work. And I think it's similar in terms of the culture we see here in Appalachia. So while people might not have the healthiest behaviors, and they might not have the most positive attitudes, it's something that people, they might be aware of, but it just takes a lot of time to fix this. And this has just been the culture for a while. Like, there's just been a culture of unhealthy lifestyles, like just the poor eating habits and uses of substances. Just, but all these have been going on for so long, it's going to take a long time to make any kind of change. And yes, change is possible, but it happens slowly. So thanks for those who are listening to this. I appreciate you for taking your time to listen to that. Till next time.